Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that's interesting.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
I'm over here trying to stifle my laugh because something happened to my intro. I'm going to have to take that one down and start a new one. Welcome to the folks show. Yeah, there we go. Welcome to the show, everybody. If you don't know by now, my name is Mary Brotherton. I am here with Be Unique Unscripted, and tonight we're going to talk about the dogs. Bob Bryant is with us from Mission Canine Rescue. He is the Chief Technology Officer, which I want to talk about that for a second after I finish my introduction. I'll talk about it now, because usually I talk to CEOs, founders, or some kind of director. I've never talked to a chief technology officer of a nonprofit. Mission Canine Rescue is an animal welfare group that is dedicated to rescuing, reuniting, rehoming, repairing, and rehabilitating American working dogs. You got the five R's going on there. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. Mary, it's great to be here. And I want to let you know that you're not just getting a rookie CTO. I'm actually a co-founder of the organization, but we try to take normal functional titles.
You slipped out.
For...
I can't hear you.
Oh, really? And you, are you there? I hear you just fine. Hang on a second.
Sound like you're underwater.
Can you hear me now?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. That was an AirPod issue. I apologize. Normally these things are spot on 100%. This is a speaker. I'll talk on that. No, in regard to the CTO thing, I'm a co-founder. Kristen Maurer and Louisa Kastner are my two other founding partners. However, we all take specific tasks within the organization, and mine in development and technology fits the CTO role. So that's how all that fits in.
Ah, okay. That makes really good sense, because as the co-founder of Be Unique, I probably have, I don't know, 4 or 5 dozen hats.
Okay, I am having cell problems here. I don't know what's going on. Keep going. I'm going to try to move into another area where it's going to be quieter. I do apologize. Not a problem.
It happens. That's the beautiful thing about living in a first world country, is we have these little problems with technology. We're not sitting around the campfire telling stories in the woods. We're using a telephone and a computer and the internet, and so we'll take what we can get.
Well, what makes me angry is, though, I pay for the stuff to be perfect, and when it's not, it makes me mad. But this is much better, so go ahead.
Yeah, I love technology as long as it's working, and when it stops working, right, I get really cranky, and my son says, first world problems, Mom. Think about it.
Right.
Could be a lot worse. Of course, I think he'd like to live in a third world country. He's kind of he's a semi-hermit. He likes his technology, too. I shouldn't say that. So did Mission K9, did you establish this organization in 2013?
Yes, we did. I actually met my two partners back in early 2012 at the Hero Dog Awards in the Los Angeles area. I had been looking at large groups on Facebook. My main business is credit card processing. I work mostly with e-commerce merchants and banks that provide their Visa MasterCard processing. And I was looking for large groups on Facebook that I could promote an offer where I would share revenue with. And I found the predecessor of Mission Canine, which my partners were part of. And they agreed, and we moved forward, and it was a good relationship until the initial director of that organization, neither one of them said, we don't want to spend any money to make any money, and my forte is advertising. And because of that, they ran out of operating funds, and she had to get a quote-unquote real job, and the work was in jeopardy. In the late summer of 2012, Kristen reached out to me and asked me if I would co-found the organization with her. And while it had never been anything on my mind, I just said, yeah. And here we are, 2021, nearly 2022, over 1,000 dogs brought home, over 520 reunited with handlers, hundreds of thousands of dollars in vet bills paid. So I'd say it's been a pretty good fit overall.
So explain to our listeners, please, what does it mean when you talk about a working dog?
Okay. A working dog is any dog that has received special training to perform tasks. In most cases with the dogs that we work with, these are either drug detection dogs, bomb detection dogs, combination dogs that have both patrol training for protection as well as either drug detection or explosive detection. We have other dogs that participate in demining work. We have some dogs, probably some of the most interesting dogs we have. We call them the fruit dogs. What the fruit dogs do is they have been trained to detect a specific type of citrus pest. And they run through orchards, and they alert on infected trees so the trees can be removed, sparing the orchard for the rest of it. And the smallest working dog I've ever seen is a Jack Russell Terrier. Tell me what you think.
Oh, my goodness.
What kind of work he might do. And I'll tell you, he was attached to the military. Take a guess. What does he do? I'll even go so far as to say he worked with the Navy.
So let me see. My son's a career Navy man, retired. Got to stop and think. What would he, and I know what Jack Russell typically do.
His dead air is no good for any radio program. I will tell you, he was a drug detection dog for submarines. He could get into the tight places that the bigger dogs can't, and he would be sent on the subs to search for narcotics.
Because, yeah, that's a problem, unfortunately.
Right. Other dogs trained for search and rescue, cadaver dogs, dogs that are trained to track, you know, coonhounds, things like that. The most prominent working dog breed now is the Belgian Malinois. They are lighter and faster than a German Shepherd. They are a little bit less. The German Shepherd is still second only to the Malinois. And then after that, we still see a large number of Labrador Retrievers. We see a lot of Springer Spaniels and German Short-Haired Pointers that are attached to TSA for airport work because they're less scary, quote-unquote, than Shepherds and Malinois.
Isn't that interesting that we assign animals a fear factor kind of thing? You know, we look at the German Shepherds and the Malinois, the Doberman Pinschers, and we go, oh, that's a scary dog. Rottweilers, pit bulls. But then you look at a little fluffy poodle or a tiny little Jack Russell. Oh, they're cute, but they're just as hardworking as the other dogs.
This is true.
Interesting.
It's just that, well, in all fairness, though, the Malinois and the Shepherds can be a bit more reactive than the other ones. However, you're correct that it is more perception than reality in most cases when it comes to the public, because a dog has to be trained to be aggressive. They don't just come out aggressive.
Exactly. And that's true for every aspect of a dog's training in my experience. You know, whatever dogs do come with certain tendencies, like you mentioned the hip dysplasia for the German Shepherds, but also they come with certain personality traits. And it's up to the trainers to make sure that they play up to the dog's strength and play down their weakness.
Correct.
Are most of these dogs, you've mentioned working with the military, but also, you know, with TSA and airport and so forth, are there any other kinds of working dogs that you work with to help rehome, like guide dogs?
Guide dogs, not so much. One category of dog that, while I didn't mention it, I want to make sure that you're aware of it. There are two types of ownership. There's government ownership of these dogs, which are the MWDs or military working dogs, or like the TSA dogs that are actually still, you know, government property. And then there are dogs owned by private entities. These dogs are known as contract working dogs. They do the same job as military working dogs. They're often attached to the United States military. Most of these dogs are working over in places like Jordan, Iraq, Colombia, North Africa. They're doing the same work as the military dogs do, but they're doing it with private handlers. And these dogs have the most difficulty when it comes time to retire and come home, because many times the contractors don't have adequate funds and the dogs are first to suffer. And you had asked me another question. I got a little brain freeze on that. What was the other question that you asked before I interrupted you with that little tidbit?
Oh, Nessie, I asked that question and moved on in my head to a whole other thing. It'll come back.
Guide dogs. I've seen a couple of guide dogs that have been adopted quite candidly. Most of the time when a guide dog is at a retirement age, it is retired in the home that it served. Whether it is doing active guiding or not, it's still loved. It's still a family member. And I've not seen any of them just given up, with one rare case, and I don't even recall the details. We did not get the dog. Otherwise, I could tell you.
So how old are dogs typically when they retire?
Generally, they are 8 or older. Most of the dogs we see come in are between 9 and 10. Some get retired early due to either small or more significant health problems. I have a 5-year-old that's about to be 6 in January, a bicolor German Shepherd that was the first working dog that we rescued from Canada. And he was found to have a little small genetic defect that could cause a muscle tear in his hip where he to work too hard. It will happen. It's an it could happen. So they needed to retire him. And for some reason, they did not want to place him with his handler. And in Canada, dogs with bite training are considered dangerous dogs and they are euthanized. So we are working to try to get them to, you know, let qualified individuals here take them. Now, their department reached out to us and said, hey, this is a great dog. You know, we don't want to see this happen. And I went to Vermont. They drove him across the border, picked him up, and I drove him 6 days back to our home. His name is Navy, and he is an incredible guy, but he needs a very strong handler because he does have protection training, and you do have to be extremely careful where you have him in public. You don't want people coming up and grabbing at him, petting him. And people sometimes say, well, you've got a do not pet sticker on his harness. And I said, it's there for a reason. You know, you don't pet him because he will bite you. Don't do it.
I was at a public event this past weekend, and it was a full weekend long. So I had a great opportunity to people and dog watch, two of my favorite things, mostly the dogs. But I was really impressed by the number of people that had their dogs with a vest on that said, do not pet. And still the number of people that would go up, can I touch him? No, you don't want to do that. It's just not a good idea. Bob, we have a caller. I want to see what they want. Do you mind?
All right.
Let's see who's on the line here. Hello.
Hi, my name's Khalil.
Hello, Khalil. How are you, sir?
Hi, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely, you can.
I was told, one of the things that I was told is two things. Is I was told that canines are not only for officer safety, but they're for public safety as well. And also, like, I found something out, like, when they do building inspections, like when police officers do building inspections, even with dogs, usually they're tactical officers that do inspection, building safety inspections with canines. I didn't know that until now.
Frankly, I am not aware of any safety inspections done by canines simply because they are trained, law enforcement dogs are trained to either detect drugs or explosives. Now, it's possible that they have some dogs somewhere that are trained for some particular compound in the construction industry. However, I must tell you, I'm honestly not aware of it, but that doesn't mean that you're not correct. You may very well be right. Now, as far as the dogs serving the public, yes. While they are used for, you know, protection, apprehension, what have you, they also take millions of dollars of drugs off the street, and they keep us safe. So you're correct there.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, the inspection of explosives in buildings and stuff like that.
Correct. Yes, bomb dogs. Yes, they'll sweep the buildings with the tactical.
Yeah, how come they use tactical officers when they use dogs to inspect the building? Like SWAT officers?
Again, I am unaware that tactical officers are used at all. Normally, it's the canine officer that may be working with the tactical team. Again, you would need to ask the department directly that's doing that, sir. I do not know.
All right. I appreciate talking with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for calling,
Leo.
Thank
you for calling. We really appreciate it.
You too. Thank you.
I'm going to take a real quick break now, and I'll be right back with Bob Bryant talking about dogs.
With summer right around the corner, so far things are getting back to normal. Everyone is feeling hopeful again, stepping outside, catching up with friends and loved ones. Just an overall feeling things are turning out for the better. At Be Unique, our overall goal is to inspire everyone as well inform with stories from around the globe how unique individuals are impacting their community in positive ways. And Be Unique is with you every step of the way, making sure 2021 will have a positive impact and inspire the next unique generation.
Well, I forgot that was my summer commercial, but that's okay. We are back with Bob Bryant. He is one of the co-founders of Mission Canine Rescue. We're talking about the dogs. Before you started working with Mission Canine, did you have dogs of your own, Bob?
Yes, I had several. In fact, one dog in particular that I was forced to give up under circumstances that now make me pretty angry are one of the reasons why that I wanted to step up and do this, because I never found out what happened to him, and I don't ever want that to happen to somebody else. So it was personal motivation, and plus, once I saw the work that these dogs did and how unselfishly they gave of themselves, it would have been difficult for me to turn away.
You know, it's interesting you said unselfish. That's one thing about dogs. They don't really expect much. They just want you to give them a little bit of attention, a little bit of love, and food. You know, they're really giving creatures, more so than seems like any other. I guess there are other animals do too, but dogs especially are just such, they are a lesson in unconditional love. No matter how you treat them, yeah, my cat, it just wants to be loved unconditionally. That's all. He doesn't care about giving
my
it
cat,
back.
Mine wants to be served unconditionally.
That's interesting. Well, my cat's kind of my Zen master.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very grateful for that because I tend to get caught up at my computer and I'll forget that it's midnight or whatever. He'll come and tap me on the leg and remind me that I haven't spent much time with him. So it's time to get away from the electronics and go spend some time cuddling him. And so I was going to ask you, how many dogs, since you've been with the organization, how many dogs have you helped rehome and you know, return to their owners or replace with, you know, give different homes?
Brought home probably over 1,100 now, well over 1,000. Of those, over 540 have been reunited with handlers that they served with. There are many videos online that you can search for and see that. It's a beautiful thing because the dog may not recognize the guy for a second or the lady, but once the dog clicks, it's just night and day. You can tell that dog has found somebody that he or she has been missing for a long time. It's really, really great to see.
And that website is missioncaninerescue.org.
However, I'll have to tell you that most of the things that you want to read about us, you can find on the Facebook platform. We're simply Mission K9 on Facebook. And searching Google for Mission Canine Rescue will bring up any number of media, pieces of media coverage with reunions and other things that can tell you a little bit more about our organization's work and scope, purpose, et cetera.
I've watched some of those videos and they're very heartwarming. They're very inspiring because like you said, the dog's like, do I know you? Oh yeah, I know you. I didn't see you for a while. Let's go. It's really cool to watch them get together. Now, I know that Mission Canine Rescue provides a lot of different services to help bring them back into a more comfortable retirement. And that's because you mentioned that they are sometimes kept, I guess, in, they don't have the proper medical care. But are these dogs sometimes left on their own or why do they need to be rescued, I guess, is my question.
Well, in many cases, the military dogs will receive good care no matter how long they may be in a kennel overseas. What used to happen, and it's changed a little bit for the better, is that when a dog would retire overseas or they were known as being dispositioned, in other words, decommissioned, kind of like a physical asset because they're not considered soldier assets, those dogs would be adoptable by one of the dog's handlers. A dog can have actually up to four handlers, maybe even five in some cases in its career, and the first handler has the first choice and then so forth. And there are many reasons, like small children and high-drive dogs that might prevent a handler from adopting his dog. But the handler is responsible for the cost of transportation from where the dog is because the military no longer considers the dog an asset and the dog has to come home by non-military means when it's retired overseas. Now, in 2016, then President Obama signed a clause in the National Defense Authorization Act guaranteeing military dogs a flight home from overseas. However, the military got around that by calling it not foreign soil. They considered any FBO base, FOB base, American soil, and they kind of postured with that. We have had some luck getting dogs sent from Japan on what are known as rotator flights that the military offers from time to time. We were able to get six almost a year ago in San Diego when COVID first kicked in. And hopefully the military will start retiring the dogs here in the United States, and then it'll make our transportation costs much cheaper. But in regard to your question regarding dogs being left, these are the contract working dogs. And when private contractors have money problems, the dogs are the first to suffer. They don't get the nutrition they need. They don't get the vet care they need. They often don't get the exercise they need. We've had dogs come to us that should weigh 70 pounds that weigh 35. And
oh my gosh.
And we actually we will make friends with contractors that in real life I would probably punch their lights out to get dogs out of bad situations. You know, while the public is wanting, anytime we say, we're bringing home, these dogs are stuck, everybody screams, tell us who the contractor is. You know, they want to do the social media swarm and attack and be the vigilantes for the dog people. What they do when they do that is they keep us from getting more dogs. So
exactly.
We're not giving you our contractor's information. We're going to take the high road and do what we can to get those dogs home with the least amount of uproar. And we've done it successfully now for 9 years. And it works. What we do works well.
That's, my father used to say, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right. We still have things that we need to do better. The main thing that's gotten us in a real fury right now is the Centers of Disease Control have put a sweeping rabies ban in effect this summer, where dogs from 100 different countries, and these are all the hot countries, there's a worry about rabies, and it's unilateral. What they're trying to do, these are American breeders, it's kind of political, they want to keep out feral dogs, but they're also preventing contract working dogs from coming in, even though all these dogs have current health certificates or rabies titers, and they're perfectly healthy. So we're fighting with that. We're working around. We have some dogs in Turkey that may have to come through a couple of cooler places and quarantine before they can come here. We just try to mount whatever obstacle we have to get over and deal with the difficulty and move on and do the right thing for the dogs.
Is there anything our listeners can do to help?
Yes, call your congressman and tell him, hey, this CDC rabies ban is political in nature. It is brought on by the purebred breeders. Lots of soldiers that have a dog that they fell in love with overseas may never get to come here because of that. And it's just wrong. Working dogs that have certified rabies titers or health certificates, there's no reason those dogs should be refused entry into the United States, which is currently what's happening. If any dog comes from abroad, from any of the listed countries, and you can search for CDC rabies ban, and you'll find out all the information.
Wow. Because, these dogs, I know that the military sees assets one way, and we see them as dogs. They're not an asset. They're a living, breathing creature. But for the CDC to do something like this is, like you said, is political in nature, and it's sad because there's a living intelligence that's suffering as a result.
Correct. And we stand ready to bring them home. We just, we do what we can, and we try to work around the politics in place that are an obstacle at the moment.
I'm going to take another real quick break, and then when I come back, I want you to walk me through what happens from the moment you find out there's a dog that needs to come home and getting him to where he needs to go.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together. Change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Mary Brotherton. I'm here with Bob Bryant, co-founder and CTO of Mission K9 Rescue. Bob, I asked you before the break to tell us when we came back what happens from the moment you hear about a dog that needs rescuing. How does that work?
Here's how it works. Normally, one of the dog's handlers will reach out to us and say, hey, you know, military working dog scout Y217 is being dispositioned by our kennel master and wherever it is, and, you know, can you help me get them home? And we always write back, yes, we can. You know, we'll handle it. What's your kennel master's information? You know, we get some information on the dog. Then my partner, Kristen, will reach out to the kennel master where the dog is stationed. They will verify the dog's disposition is retired, and then we will make arrangements to bring the dog home. We will raise money to bring the dog home. We do have a general fund, though, in case we underfund something. We may have overfunded something else, so there's not a question of can we bring the dog home. Yes, we will always be able to. We then work with the handler to facilitate a reunion. In many cases, we try to have the right now, the only airlines that will fly dogs in large crates, which our dogs require, is Lufthansa and KLM. And we will try to get those dogs to come into Intercontinental Airport in Houston, where we will receive them and then get them ready, make sure that they're medically fit. And military dogs always are in pretty good shape, so there's very little decompression time required. And then we will take the dog to wherever the handler is, and we will reunite the dog. Normally they're at some airport, and that's how it works. And the handler and dog are reunited, and they go their merry way, happily ever after.
Is it common for a dog to be decommissioned prior to the service person's end of tour of duty?
Yes, we have a lot of handlers. Well, for instance, let's say you're handler number four on a dog that's 9 years old, and you've just got your handler certification. You're working, you know, Marine Corps canine unit. You're in for 2 to 4 years. That dog already has priority for adoption by his first or second handler. If your dog's third or fourth handler, you're probably not going to get to adopt that dog. And the military will tell you up front, same thing with law enforcement. TSA, they tell their handlers, whatever you do, and they do it anyway, don't fall in love with the dog. Yeah,
oh, that's
right.
A hard
They always do. And what we find is that when a handler allows another handler, I say allow, let's say the first handler can't take his dog because he has a little kid and the dog's toy crazy and might, you know, teeth might get in the way of a kid in the ball unintentionally. The second handler takes the dog, but he tells the first handler, hey, you know, you want to come over and see your pup? Just reach out anytime you want to. And it's just it's a brotherhood, and they share the love of the dog with the handlers whenever they can.
That's amazing. I'm always amazed at how a working dog works with the handler, because there's so much training that goes in on both sides of the relationship. The human has to know what the commands are and has to know what they can and cannot accept or allow. And the canine has to know as well. But I love watching on television or YouTube or wherever. I love watching it in person when you get to see like a sheriff's demonstration doing something, you know, working with their canines. And,
right.
And these dogs just, there's a subtle, I guess it's like eye command almost. They look up and they you can see they're connecting with the human on a different level.
I can get my dog to do what I want him to just by looking at him in a particular way.
That's amazing.
One thing you miss that's also very important is you learn to read the dog's body language. It's not just the commands. You can tell the dog's mood by their posture, by how they're – for instance, when Navy is laying down next to me when I'm outside, he's not chilling. He's ready to get somebody if they come too close. That's his ready position. Where most people, he's just lying down, he's happy. No, he's watching you.
Isn't that true with most animals? You know, their body, and with people too, their body language is half of the conversation.
Right. Agree.
I think it's so important that we need to learn to read the room, basically, or read the animal that we're either working with or living with, or just visiting. If you go into a person's house and they have a dog, and this dog starts acting peculiar, you don't want to just reach out and go, "Oh, hey, puppy, hey." There's a reason that dog is, either skirting around the room or slinking down. There's a lot of little tattletale signs that these dogs put out, and they don't even have to be extremely well trained to just be able to pay attention. Just watch what's going on sometimes.
True. Would you also like to hear the procedure when we get contract working dogs?
I would indeed, because I'm sure that's a whole lot different.
It is, because in most cases, the contract working dog did not have an American handler. Even though they are bred here, trained here, they're often handled by non-U.S. citizens, and there is they rotate them in and out, so they're not getting attached to the dogs. The good companies that we really respect, like AM Canine, Vaporwave Technologies, Bonlick Kennels, they will reach out to us when they have dogs of retirement age and ask if we have room for their dogs, which we always try to make room. The larger groups that we find in horrible situations, we work to get them rescued. We fly them in from overseas. In many cases, we will take a team of volunteers, volunteers are people that work with us frequently in this particular work. I don't want anybody to get the idea that they can just call up and jump on a plane and go get dogs. You have to have canine handler certification. It is required. But we will take a team to Kuwait or another country, and then we can fly two dogs with one person as excess baggage, so the cost gets almost cut in half. But it still costs almost $2,000 to get a dog home from Kuwait. It's a $6,000 trip home from Japan. The cost is just enormously, outrageously expensive these days. And when these dogs, when the dogs do come in, understand they've been in the crate in many cases for 24 hours straight. It's a mess. We break the dogs, we give them a break, we clean them up, we give them water, and then we take them to our facility in Magnolia, Texas, where they decompress. We have them medically evaluated. Anything they need, they get. If they're not neutered, they are neutered. If they are not spayed, they are spayed. Because we don't want people breeding dogs. There's enough people. There's enough dogs as there is.
Mm-hmm.
And these dogs' work is done. No breeding. No more catching the bad guy. No more find the bombs. Now, if you want to let them, my dog, he's learned to find tennis balls. I can take him to a park, and he'll find every buried tennis ball in the park, and it's a hoot.
I love
to watch him find them, because he'll find one, and then he'll drop the next one when he finds the next one, and he's not interested in it anymore. He found 9 the other night. In fact, when we are through with our interview, he's going to be going to the park, and he'll get to do some hunting. So it's always fun. But these contract dogs, when they come in, we take the time, sometimes months, to integrate them back to where they can be pets. I mean, we determine if they're food aggressive, crate aggressive, other animal aggressive, and then these dogs are adoptable to the public that are able to provide for their needs. And each dog is an individual, and a lot of people ask us, well, why don't you have pictures of the dogs for adoption up on your website? And the answer is simple. The dog you pick from a picture is probably not a fit for your home. So
we get an
application from a potential adopter. We vet that. We make sure that they have the ability to provide the dogs what they need. And please, if you can't afford to take a dog to the vet 3-4 times a year for general checkup, don't adopt. Please don't ask. We want our dogs to have the care they may have not received. So that's real important. If you have a house full of pets, it's going to be a long time, because most working dogs are not compatible with other dogs, and almost all of them don't like cats. Now, mine is a rarity, because he will actually let the cat smack him in the face and not do anything.
Oh,
so,
what a sweetie.
And I told the cat his days could be numbered and to be careful how aggressive he got. But they get along great. I'm surprised.
That's awesome. You know, he might think you look like a tennis ball kitten. Watch out.
That's right. But that's the general adoption procedure. And we make sure that, you know, the dogs, they'll have adequate exercise, that they have good stimulation, proper diet, and that they're not left at home. You know, we don't want somebody that works all the time. So I'm going to leave the dog at home. No, please don't adopt. Have the time to spend with the dog.
That is one reason. That is one reason I have a cat, not a dog.
I understand.
Because,
and that's a cat.
Yeah, I know my limit.
Sure.
Yeah. I know what I can and cannot provide. Years ago, when I had smaller children and a less active career, I had dogs, and I know the difference. So I don't want to subject an animal to my lack of ability to care for them properly.
Thank you.
Just like I wouldn't adopt a horse because I don't have a farm to put him on, you know?
I love horses, but I don't have the time or the money. No.
Nope.
Or the space.
Yeah. And that, something else I think that would be important for people interested in adopting a former working dog is that most of these dogs, except for the little Jack Russells, they're going to be big dogs with big appetites. So that means a big food bill.
Generally two, three cups of food a day. I mean, it's not the...
Yeah.
It isn't the prohibitive. Often, though, they may have some condition because of their age or the compounds that they've been exposed to that will require a special food. They may have to have some eye drops. You know, they may have to have a pill for this or that. So,
yeah.
You know, that's part of it. One other thing I think is real important for your audience to know, there are a lot of organizations out there that claim to be nonprofit, and then you look at the percentage of the money that you give them that actually goes to the work. Now, yes, we have employees. We have 16 people on staff. We have a large kennel crew. We have 54 dogs in our care. But nobody flies first class. Nobody sits in leather chairs. Nobody stays at five-star hotels. Our principals make less than half of what the, you know, the for-profit companies would. And my intent to saying that is that out of $1 that we're given, 91 cents goes to the work. And people ask me what we do with the other 9 cents, and it's simple. I take that 9 cents, I advertise with it, and I raise another 91 cents.
Right.
So, and when you get into organizations that are, oh, I'm sorry. When you see orgs that are spending.
Keep talking, Bob. I'm going to be quiet.
Oh, I was going to say many organizations tout about the work they're doing, and then you see that 65%, 65 cents out of a dollar goes to the work. That's unacceptable. Anything less than 75% of your money as a donation going to the work, in my opinion, is not good. And
I apologize
for interrupting you.
No, it's okay. It's because we're both very passionate about what you're doing, and I'm passionate about nonprofits doing the right thing. In fact, I'm going to tell you about an organization I want you to check into. It's called Donate Smarter.
Right.
And it's based here in Florida, but they're looking to expand. And they work with nonprofits. And Be Unique just recently got a $1,000 grant from them. And all we had to do was fill out a profile. We just filled, I don't have to tell you how hard grants are to come by. And the process involved in getting a grant.
Grant writing's a pain. Our president and my co-founder, Kristen, she's going to be concentrating on grant writing this next year because we need to move to the next level. I raise nearly $1 million a year on people off Facebook, just off the Facebook platform. And we do about $1.6 million a year. However, the more people find out about us, we're asked to take more and more dogs, and we've gotten to the point where we're having to tell them, you know, wait, now we haven't turned any down yet, but we need to increase our capacity. And to do that, a nonprofit has to have its hands stuck out, but we do try to spend our money within good faith and the public trust.
That was going to be my next question. You said you have 54 dogs right now.
Correct.
How many can you house where you are right now?
We can house about 50. We have around 9 in off-site boarding, which is extremely expensive, and we have some in medical boarding because they need, you know, round the clock care. I would like to see our facility expand to a capacity of about 75 with some drainage improvements, with an additional kennel, with some septic. We can do that.
Okay.
Again, the bigger you get, the longer you stay around, the more people want you to do, but it's still just as hard to get the funds as it was from day one.
It
although
is.
we are blessed, and we've been receiving very, very good support, and we're thankful for that.
Definitely look into Donate Smarter. He's looking to expand, and
okay.
I think this might be something that could be – they have rotating grants, and all you have to do is fill out a profile on that page, put up a couple of projects, and you never have to apply for another grant again. You only get $1,000 at the time, but you could qualify for $1,000 every 90 days.
That is pretty nice. Yes, it is.
But if you start battling me for my money, we're going to have a problem, Bob.
Don't worry. Keep your money.
You know what? There's enough to go around. There really is. And I was going to say, considering
what I see people wasting money on, I absolutely hope that's true. Keep giving.
I believe it is. I think there's more abundance out there than people want to believe. And sometimes Jennifer, my co-founder, and there are three of us there, and she and I talk more than Lynn and I do for different reasons. But when Jennifer and I talk about, you get stressed out about deadlines and getting things done, and we have to remind each other that we are not rescuing dogs. We're not feeding hungry children. We're not a shelter for battered wives. So what we do is no less important. We help share the words about these organizations, and we help spread awareness. But it's still in the perspective, we don't have an immediacy. Like when you get a call to come get a dog from a contractor that may be in ill health, I'll say, needs medical attention, you want to act pretty fast. And
we do.
That's not something that we have to do. We have the luxury of not having to rush. And I'm grateful for that.
There are many times we go into our own pockets when we have to. And that gets tough because none of us is personally wealthy.
Oh, you're singing to the choir now. Definitely singing to the choir. In fact, at this event I told you we were at over the weekend, it was a 12-hour event. So it went from 9 to 9. We've never done one past, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Around about sunset, I'm thinking, uh-oh, we don't have any lights in this tent. So I had to call my husband. I said, you need to go to Home Depot, because that's the only store he knows. Go to Home Depot and find me some Christmas lights that are run by batteries. He said, for what? I said, you just do it and bring it to me. And so he got me a couple of strings of lights, and we put them up, and I was still in, ready to go for business.
Nice.
I'm going to play one more commercial, and then we're going to wrap up a little bit. I'll be thinking about what else you want our listeners to know about.
Be Unique Radio brings you unscripted conversations with world changers and difference makers Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on all your favorite platforms. Visit BeUnique.org to learn who is scheduled next and how you can talk with our guests and become part of the show. That's BUNEKE.org. See you there.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Mary with Bob Bryant from Mission Canine Rescue. We've been going to the dogs tonight. What is something that you want to leave my listeners with? And, we have listeners in 77 countries now.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Because the show is only 2 years old. The Thanksgiving weekend will be 2 years old.
Congratulations. That's great growth.
Thank you. I feel very honored to have reached as many people as we have.
What I'd like to leave with your audience is that we consider people that support us part of our team. And we know that when they think about the donation that they want to give us or they have given us, and they look down the road in their mind 6 months and they see what good that donation has done. They're so happy because they chose to give. And knowing that we do it right and that we do it for the dogs, none of us does this because we want any publicity. I'm happy to be on this show, but, you know, I'm not all pumped up and, you know, act like I'm big stuff because I was. You know, it helps us do our work. We can double our work with increased donations, and it is the nature of the beast for a nonprofit to have his hand stuck out. However, we promise you that we will do the right thing for these dogs and that we will always keep the public upfront and aware of what we're doing, how we're doing it, when we're doing it, and where we're doing it. There's no mysteries. If we tell you we need X amount to bring a dog home, that's what we need, and if we overfund it, it goes to the next dog. So there's always a good purpose and an outcome when you give.
That's awesome. And trust me, Bob, if I could figure out how to get Navy on here to talk to me instead of you, you'd take backseat for sure.
Yes, that's very true. I agree. But thank you so much for having me tonight. I genuinely appreciate it,
you're
and
so
our organization appreciates
it. That somebody has to speak for the dogs, and it falls into your lap, apparently. And I'm delighted that you're here. I learned a lot more. I thought I knew quite a bit about Mission Canine Rescue from your website and from writing about, I think we had a, David was the one who wrote about you early last March, I think it was, told the story about Roxy. And, you know, you have a lot of Roxy and Navy stories, I'm sure. You've got a lot of stories that you can tell. And,
hundreds.
Yes. And a lot of those stories are on your website and on your Facebook page, correct?
Correct. Facebook is the place. The website, I need to be more serious about working with the blog there. But since most of our people go to Facebook, you know, we try to feed the audience that, you know, wants to hear more. But web is going to become a little bit more active thing. I've been busy and now I've got a little more time, so I'm going to spend some more time beefing up our blog.
Is Facebook your only social site?
We have presence on Instagram. I find Twitter worthless. Most of the stuff. Let's look at it this way: 2% of the country uses Twitter, and of that, only 2% are the ones that are active and are listened to. So we're having our minds controlled by a little tiny speck of people who, in the end, really maybe don't matter that much. I would say Facebook. Facebook predominantly. I have some presence on LinkedIn, and we have just some fun pictures on Instagram.
Yeah. We have the majority of our donations actually come through Facebook. And
right, ours as well.
Are you aware that you can monetize a single post on Facebook?
Of course, yes. We have
a lot of people don't know this.
Oh yes, you can. I have many active Facebook ads running. I have boosted posts running, and I can tell anyone in the social media game that engagement is the key to a successful ad. The more people engage with it, the more people share it, the better it will do.
Well, I call some of my posts my instant fundraisers because you can put a post up and it'll ask you, "Do you want to create a fundraiser?"
Right, exactly. That's on the page. We also use Facebook's ad platform to, you know, we actually do better fundraising off the page, but through our own donation platform by monetizing it as a Facebook ad. In fact, if you ever want to talk about social media and Facebook ads, that's another topic I know a lot about and would be glad to share for our nonprofit friends on how they can maximize their stuff. I don't do it for a living, but I do it for the organization and I do it pretty well.
Well, you know what? I might have to reach out to you and put you on the calendar. It'll be another 8 months. Actually, you know what?
I don't
it doesn't
care.
Have to be another 8 months. I'll reach out to you. I'm going to start a new show. I just keep doing all these shows because I love talking to people. But I'm going to start one called, I think, I'm just going to call it Be Unique on Demand. When I want to talk to somebody special. But I've got your address. I'll reach out to you. We'll set something up.
Right. I have something else I'll mention to you as well off the air. I'll email it to you. And again, thank you very much for having me on.
You're very welcome. I hope you and Navy have a great hunt tonight. What time is
we
it?
Are,
you must be far on the other side of Texas.
I'm the only team that's out on the West Coast. We have a pretty good donor base out here, and I had some relatives out here for years. I'm in Thousand Oaks, California, the only remaining slightly little conservative bastion of Southern California. It's not too crazy out here just yet. It's about 7 o'clock. I grew up in Texas.
Okay, so you still have a little daylight then.
No, it's dark. I don't care.
Is it?
He doesn't care. I have a flashlight. It's all good.
Hey. Well, I hope he beats his record tonight and comes back with 10 or 11 tennis balls.
And he's one dog that if it's pitch black, I don't worry a bit about walking him in the dark because I know he's going to take care of anything that needs to be taken care of.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
All right. Have a wonderful
evening. Well, I'm going
to
bid you both good night. And, Bob, I'm so grateful to talk with you, and I look forward to talking with you more about other subjects.
Have a good evening.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.